they best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a night to keep, he can't hang around.
Io's house in the middle of our street.
Io's house
in the middle of our.
Io's house.
It has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud.
Io's
mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed.
Isle's House Passover Edition. Before we get into the latest Islanders news, got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow the page at Isle's House. Follow all of us. I'm at Ethan GSN, Jack at Isle's Den, Rocco at Pizza Sports Guy, Tyler at Bars Down. Subscribe to the pod. We're on iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. A few games since the Islanders Ovechkin debacle, which is when we recorded last. We're off to Jackie recaps.
Yes, we are. So following up the Ovechkin game where we won 4-1, the Islanders went down to Nashville. And look, this game is kind of just a blur to me. There were two things that I remember. The first one was Sorokin left the game. And the second part was the Islanders were up 6-4. With 2 minutes left in the third period after Scott Mayfield scored a shorthanded goal, and somehow they give up 2 goals to the Nashville Predators. I know I shouldn't be surprised, but I mean, come on now. Nashville, we're blowing these leads too. It's unbelievable. They blow another electric moment. Like, I don't even care where we are in the standings. Scott Mayfield just scored a shorthanded goal to make it 6-4, and you blow that game. Hogberg literally, I think, gave up 3 goals on like 5 shots. So Nashville gets the PAT and they win 7-6 in OT. Rangers, I don't even want to go through this. 9-2 loss. Everything was just flat out horrible. I mean, Wah doesn't know who's playing. Romanov was benched or was doing something for 10 minutes and nobody really gave us an explanation as to why. He hasn't been playing great, so if he was benched, I would have understood that. Anyway, Hogberg gives up 7 goals. They bring in Tristan Lennox, rookie goaltender, making his first NHL start. He's a kid, probably not ready for this moment. He gets thrown into action, gives up a goal through the 5-hole, and is immediately yanked from the game again for Hogberg, stirring a ton of controversy on Isle's Twitter. That was the first time Fire Wah became the popular take, I would say, in this fan base. And that leaves us to today, where the Islanders visited the lowly Philadelphia Flyers and joined them in the lowliness, losing 4-3 in a shootout that they had a chance to win twice. And with that, they have been officially eliminated from playoff contention. And while doing that, they did a great job trolling their fans once again by getting the loser point to move to get a little bit closer away from getting a top pick. I think it's a very appropriate way for them to mathematically end their season, but my God, another near unwatchable week of hockey, and we have 3 more games left. And yeah, with that, I'll kick it off to you guys, but damn.
Yeah, it was not a fun 3 games since the last time we recorded. And I just want to say, before I get to a couple points, the one thing I will miss from the season is the Jackie recaps, because you've been doing a great job on those. I'm really going to miss them. I love your little run-throughs. I thought the PAT of the 7-6 loss, that was the highlight for this recap. I like that line.
That was good.
A little underrated. Kept a straight face, didn't chuckle, nothing. Very professional. Getting better and better with the recaps. But yeah, ugly, ugly, ugly. It's like, I think I'm crazy watching them. Like, I put them on at the shop today and I'm watching the game, and I got like some of the other guys working there, like, aren't they out? Like, what's going on? We got the Masters on. I'm like, we're gonna have the Isles on the TV for now, okay? But it's just the life we chose. It's not pretty. I mean, Jack mentioned the Lennox move. That might have bothered me with Wah more than most minor things I've gotten upset at throughout the season. I thought that was really, really lame. I mean, the game's over. It's the guy's first taste of NHL action. We know he's not built for this moment. We know he's in more of a – I think he's more of an ECHL goalie than AHL goalie, to be honest. I think on the depth chart, he is on the Railers, I believe, right? Because it's Skarik and Ogberg began the season in the A. So Lennox was more the number five guy overall when you take Barley into account as well. So just give the kid his moment. The season's over. Didn't get that at all. And after today's loss in the shootout, I'm just hoping, like, let us see some kids. Like, have some fun at this point. Who cares? Jack, you stopped in the shop. You mentioned just let Boqvist get some reps. Let Perunovic get a few reps. Like, change it up a little bit. The season's over. You're not making the playoffs. Let some guys play. Maybe make a call-up or two. Give guys a shot. And give us something to actually watch for the remainder of the way. I mean, we have three games, and what are we going to watch? The same group that couldn't get it done, and most of which we're hoping aren't on the roster next season.
I mean, there's nothing fun to watch. That's the problem.
There isn't, but...
You want a different kind of bad.
Give me false hope.
No, that's not false hope. It's you want a different kind of bad because you're bored of the current state of bad. Am I wrong?
I want young bad versus old bad, I guess.
Okay, exactly. You want different bad.
Yeah,
you're bad,
young.
Okay, so I guess losing 9-2 to your crosstown rivals wasn't a bad enough switch up.
It wasn't.
I'd Alex rather Jeffries out there for, honestly, for a 9-2 loss.
I think, and you guys tell me what you think, but do we think that 9-2 loss may affect anything as far as Scott Malkin's thinking, Ledecky's thinking, what Lou's status is, what Waz's status is? Do we think that horrendous loss to your crosstown rival changes anything?
Yes, I do.
How so, Ethan?
Well, again, I think it would take a lot for Lou Lamoriello to be gone after this season. But I hate to bring it back to this, and I'm saying this on pure speculation. There are some things that I'll source later on in the episode, mainly about roster decisions. But as it pertains to going back to, I guess this is like one of our first few episodes, but Wah versus Lou, like Wah is not going anywhere. And I think that at this point, I don't want to say we're seeing Wah versus Lou part two, but Patrick Wah has two more years left on his deal after this season. Lou Lamoriello has gone through Trotz. He's gone through Lambert. And are we really going to let an 83-year-old GM, who this may be his last year, hire a new coach? Logic says no. So I'm curious what you guys think of my framing here in terms of lineup decisions, pulling Lennox, the goaltending situation. Jack, I know you have taken some issue with some of Waz's lineup decisions over the past few games that we can get into, but it seems like, in my eyes at least, Patrick Waz understands he has leverage and that if it's going to be one of them leaving, more likely than not, it's going to be Lou. And if you look at the starting lineup today, you have a bottom six consisting of Engvall, Cizikas, Fasching, Martin, McLean, Gatcombe. Completely, totally, you could be the greatest coach in the world, an unworkable, unplayable lineup. And that includes a guy like Gatcombe, whose shooting percentage is about 20 points higher in the NHL than it was in the AHL. So even the guys who are playing well are overperforming wildly. Give them the Kyle MacLean Award, give them the Alan Quine Award, whatever award joke you want to make. Like, the bottom six is absolute garbage. The defense is terrible. Pajot is not a second line center. Tsiplikov, in all reality, is probably not a second line winger. Bo Horvat, in the game against the Flyers, I have to go back and look at his minutes against some of the other teams. Bo Horvat played 21 minutes. The only defensemen that played more minutes were Dobson and I think one other. So Bo Horvat is playing more minutes. I think it was D'Angelo. Dobson and D'Angelo were the only two defensemen to have more minutes than Bo Horvat. So again, just like the year where Barzal went down and Bo Horvat carried them on his back to the playoffs, the guy's getting overworked again. So complain all you want, bitch about lineup decisions, complain about pulling Lennox. The roster is bad. It's so bad. And we'll get into the macro later on, but like, this is not a one-year turnaround. This roster stinks. They I've are been trying bad.
To, I'm glad they're you're cooked. Coming around on that, Ethan, because
they're cooked. Rocco, I've always subscribed to your gap year theory.
You did.
All right, fine. I'll get into the macro briefly before throwing it back to Jack, who has a million thoughts, I'm
and
sure.
And also, quick shout out to Data Dom for that Gatcombe shooting percentage. Very good
yes,
tweet.
Yes, shout out to Data Dom. But, like, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I'm stating that the entirety of the Islanders' success next year quite literally rests on them landing the whale of free agency, if he even gets to market, in Mitch Marner. And even if they do get Mitch Marner, I still think this roster, like, that maybe gets you to another back to a first round exit. Like, I'm not convinced that even, like, is good enough to improve the team enough to go deep into the playoffs. Like, we're going to pull up Cal Ritchie next year. How many points do people think a rookie centerman who's probably going to be centering the third line is going to put up? Like, people talk about him like he's going to be immediately a half point per game player. Newsflash, that's what Pageau's putting up. Cal Ritchie's probably going to be putting up like 30 points. Yzerman's still another year away. We have no idea what Danny Nelson projects to be. Bednarik, like, another 2 years probably. Like, this is a barren farm system, an aging roster, an 83-year-old GM, and I'm sorry to crush all hope, but that's what I'm doing. Like, this is just an unworkable roster right now, even with a healthy Barzal.
And I think the one part too, and I keep saying it, like, when you get to the summer, I do not want them moving draft picks because they need to improve this prospect pool. I know we always say, oh, the first round pick's the most overrated trade chip and whatever else, but that's what scares me, is that if we don't land one of these free agents, Marner being the dream and Ehlers being a tier below that, that I believe would still be acceptable as your main move of the offseason. If you don't get one of those guys to improve this roster, you're going to be looking at trades. And to get any piece of significance, you're going to probably have to give up first round pick or two, maybe the one we got from the Avs, whatever it is. But it's going to feel like too much. And I've said this, if they don't land the top UFA, I just hope they go kind of take a step back. All right, it's going to take longer than this. But the issue is, we're most likely going into an offseason where it's going to be make or break for our GM and coach, at least potentially. Yeah. If Lou and Wah are still here, it's make or break for both of them, in my opinion. And that's a very scary proposition. But Jack, I'm sorry.
I want to throw it to Jack for the micro, but just real quick before I do, like, could we get into the macro constantly? Because I feel like that's what a lot of fans care about. At least it's what I care about, is success for the team in the long run. But, like, if you think about every single thing that this team needs, they need at least a first line winger, a second line winger. Realistically, if you were to pull the fan base about the defensive group, they need to replace Pulock, who's got a full no move. They need to replace Pellick, who's got a modified no trade. I think a majority of the fan base is against re-signing Noah Dobson to anything even remotely close to what he's looking for. That's three defensemen right there. You have Tony DeAngelo, who you need to want him to re-sign. You need a backup goalie. You need your $8.5 million goalie to, one, stay healthy, and two, play up to his contract, neither of which he's done since inking that deal. And I feel like people just think, oh yeah, we'll just get healthy, we'll go sign Marner, it'll be great, and we'll be fine. It's just like, people don't understand how much work there is to do to get back to the top tier of the NHL, because we were spoiled and had Barry Trotz coach this island of misfit Garth Snow disciples to back-to-back Eastern Conference finals. And I just, there's so much luck involved that I'm just not optimistic.
To sum the defense up quickly for Ethan, the only guys signed into next year are Pulock, Pellick, and Mayfield. And those are all three guys we'd probably prefer traded versus remaining here next season. But Jack, please, the floor is yours.
I do think that, like, we've forgotten how the team's supposed to be structured versus how they had to be in these last 2 months. Like, I don't think Kyle Palmieri is your first line right winger next season. Like, you know, they kept him. He is that role right now. I mean, we had to expect it was going to go poorly. We all wanted Nelson to be traded when he was traded. I don't think anyone here was like, keep Brock so we can make one run into the playoffs. That was going to be probably meaningless.
No, but there are plenty of people in the fan base that were pro signing a guy from 34 to 37 years old.
No, you're right. And I think those people are wrong, and I think they're going to be proven wrong. Like, this, I don't know what they're going to do this offseason. None of us have a crystal ball, but you have to have a little bit of faith that Kyle Palmieri is not going to be your first line right winger, and that hopefully even maybe Lee is a second line left winger. Like, they need answers here. Barzell's your first line center. We're missing our first line center. That's a big deal. Moving Horvat to your second line and not having him play, as you mentioned, 21 minutes is so important. Now, listen, I don't think the roster is in a great spot. I'm not going to lie to you, but I don't think it's as bad as you're making it seem right now. And it's because it's reactionary. Like, dude, I don't blame you. You've watched garbage for the last like 3 weeks. It's brutal. It takes a toll on you. And yeah, it's just, it's hard to watch right now, but there has to be something coming through the door. Like, I have a very hard time believing that a GM of Lou's pedigree has no plan. Whether he gets Marner or not, I feel like there's a plan after a plan after a plan. Like Nelson.
Yeah, the problem is I hate his plan. Like, his plan A was to bring back Brock Nelson and Kyle Palmieri on multi-year deals.
Did you hate his plan B?
Which was what? To trade Brock?
For that exact plan B is pretty well. That was plan B.
Yeah, correct. But that plan was my B that was Brock, my plan
because
A.
It was his decision.
Yeah, thank you, Brock. But what I'm saying though is like, there's
you understand what I'm saying, right? Like, that was the GM's mindset. Like, that is
that's
the,
scary.
That is
what he wanted. Yeah. He wanted these guys back.
But this is my issue. We just never know what follows what. Like, I personally think if they re-sign Nelson, I think Palmieri would have been traded. I could be wrong. I don't know. Is that fair?
It's fair.
Yeah. Like, I just don't
money
think
wise. Just money wise, they couldn't fit both if they want to get better. I agree with you there.
It's tough though, because I will admit, like, I hate to admit this, but like, I could so see that, like, them re-signing Brock, but then keeping Palmieri for the run. But I don't know. We won't get into
I think that's exactly what would have happened.
You think that's what would have happened? Maybe
I know that's what would have happened.
Yeah, it feels. I have to admit, I'll take that one back. I don't think they would have gotten rid of him, but we just don't know. We don't know what's coming, and I do want to shift gears a little bit to what you were saying on Wah. I don't think Wah's on the hot seat for the reasons you mentioned about having about Lou having like what this would be his fourth head coach hire. Like, that's why I think that Wah is safe, but I think Wah's going to resign. I do.
Oh,
and I'm not. I have no sources on this. Like, I just am trying to. I'm just reading the guy's body language and his personnel decisions. They don't make sense to me. And I don't know. It just feels like a sabotaging act sometimes with him.
Well, again, Jack, that goes back to my initial theory, right? Like, we were arguing in the group chat earlier about the extra skater Mark Gatcombe versus throwing out, you know, a Palmieri or Horvat. And I'm citing Horvat's time on ice, this, that, and the other thing. But like, there have been plenty of times this season where we have discussed roster decisions that Wah has made and have almost unanimously agreed, all right, he's doing that to prove a point. I mean, Pierre Engvall is the perfect example. Like, I think that was probably a combination of getting the message through as much as it was making a point that this guy stinks. He doesn't want him on the roster. And again, it's a stalemate, right? Lou has the backing of ownership, we think, and Wah knows that even though he has that backing, he probably doesn't have the equity at his age and at his tenure to move on and hire a fourth coach. So is he just doing this to prove a point? Like, hey, this roster fucking sucks.
So you think,
this is what you've saddled me with.
You think that, like, when it's time for the extra attacker to come out and there's five guys on the ice, you think, like,
I'm putting
like,
out Mark Gatcombe.
He's like, 20, get out there. And like, goes to the press box and just, like, flipping off Lou. Like,
bro, part of me, like, I don't know, man. Wah's been a hothead his entire career.
He's a sicko. Yeah.
He is a sicko.
You can't just turn that off either.
Right. I mean, you know how many times I've just been like, you know, wake up in the morning, walk into the kitchen to grab my coffee. My wife's there. I'm just like, fucking Islanders lost again. Season's over. And she's like, is it? I'm like, technically not. I've done that like 10 times. I've done that 10 times.
You did it after the first game. The first game you came into the shop and you're like, oh, they don't look good. I don't like this at all. Like, it's a lot of emotional swings.
It is. Real quick, some insider hour real quick. Sorokin should be fine. Back injury, nothing. I mean, we all agree we just shut the guy down. He's played an unprecedented number of games off back surgery, and he's tweaked something again, but it's not like a serious thing. I would just shut him down regardless. You guys brought it up earlier. Skarik was supposed to be the call-up. I was told by a close source that I don't know how many, but numerous Bridgeport players are battling mono. And that is why Lennox got the call-up instead of Skarik. So I think we now understand why Bridgeport is as bad as they are. It's because they're too busy kissing each other and not practicing. That's pretty much all I got for the insider stuff.
Well, Ethan, what is your... Do you think they shut him down? I know you. We all agree that they
no
should.
No idea.
Sorokin, you don't know. Nothing.
Not a clue. Not,
that guy I mean, starts dude, tomorrow.
I'm hoping now that they're dude, eliminated, the fact that they don't even debate it.
The fact that it was even a question. It was like, he's going to skate. We're going to test him. This, that, and the other. Like, why?
Why? Play it safe. The season's over. He's your franchise goalie. He's paid for, what has he got, 7 years left after this? Give the guy a break.
Shut him down.
You know
shut
what?
Him down.
Honestly,
John
Ethan,
Taffer, shut it down.
That whole situation now that I'm looking at it, like Waz, like, all right, like we're just going to, we have Hogberg out there, gives up 8 goals. He's like, okay, Lou, I'll put in your other guy. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
One
exactly.
goal. One goal. Like, it's crazy.
And by the way, I don't agree with the pulling of Lennox. Like, I just don't put the guy in the first place. But this goes back to what I was saying earlier, man. Hogberg is not good. He cannot be the backup. And there are some folks out there who are just like, no, he's fine. He's good. He's a backup. No, guy's like a 30-year-old AHL lifer. He's not good. We're witnessing it firsthand. He got off to an okay start. That's about it.
Hogberg is like, at best, can be the new Corey Schneider, in my opinion, where he's
sure.
an AHL guy and emergency. We don't want to call up Ken Appleby, so he could play one or two games.
Right.
An emergency basis. But I mean, they need, I don't even think we addressed it with the holes, but that's another hole. They also need a backup goalie because Hogberg's not good enough. I mean, yep. You leave, it's not that difficult. You take out, you put like 1.25 aside and you wave it in front of free agents and someone will come. Like I know Gillette, who made up our boy Gillette that always listens to the pod. He made up a lineup that had like, Who's the Johansson Jack? Jonas Johansson, whatever the backup name is. Someone
on the Lightning.
Fine.
Yeah.
Just like a serviceable backup that's played before that can start 25 games. We don't need anything crazy. $1 million, $1.5 million, get that done.
I'm not going to lie.
Can't be
I think we need
it can't be Hogberg. His rebound control is atrocious.
No, I think we need to actually sign a backup goalie for like $2.5 million and overpay. Like we actually need. Because, dude, we need somebody.
Then you wipe away all the Varley money that you get back.
Yeah, but what I've understood, though, is, like, this is the thing I have with, like, the salary cap. And someone kept saying to me, not going to mention his name, but, you know, Hogberg's on league minimum. Like, he put together a few good starts. Okay, now he's playing, like, league minimum. You get what you spend on a backup goalie. Like, you need a good goalie in this situation. Like, as Ethan mentioned before, Sorokin can't handle that, like, number one starting goalie workload that we saw in the late 2000s where these guys were starting, like, a legit 60 to 65 games in a season. Like, he can't do it. His body won't allow him.
Do you think that's part of the problem? Like, he looks across the room at Juan, and Juan's like, I used to do it.
Yes, I do think that that's kind of a thing that Waugh doesn't even really think twice about it. Waugh's thinking your season's on the line, you're a competitor, you want to be in net. And I bet Sorokin does, but
yeah,
Sorokin
no.
actually gave out at one point. Like mentally, he lost it. When our season ended.
Not the first time.
Our season ended, in my eyes, I'm not even kidding. I was at the game and we had just gotten that bad call against Columbus and it's 2-2 late in the second. And I still had a feeling like, okay, like we can get it together. We can make the playoffs. I don't know what happened to me when Derek Forbort scored that goal for Vancouver at the end of the second period. I don't know what happened. I really just knew the season was over. Third period starts, another softie goes in. This team never recovered. he needs rests. We need a reliable backup goalie. Like, there's no question. So I'm okay.
He needs a psychologist. I mean, he's getting pulled in the playoff series and he's crying in the freaking tunnel. And then Ovechkin is thanking him all over the place, even on Twitter after. I mean, the guy's getting mentally bullied left and right. And I'm sure it doesn't help that Patrick Waugh's his coach.
I don't know what Islander fan did this, but I saw that after Sorokin sent the glove, someone else was like, took a picture of them like sending the net. They're like, oh, they're going to take UBS Arena and the Islanders also. That was hilarious. Don't know who it was, but if it was you, mention us in the, when we drop the pod. We need a backup goalie. Like, I think Varlamov was probably the most underrated killer injury this season.
No, yeah, that's actually fair. But as far as the backup goalie, like, you have to think of the total sum you're going to pay your goalies. And again, it's just my opinion, but I'd cap it at like 10. What does Sorokin make? 8.25, 8.5?
Yes.
Yeah, like, I don't want to pay my two goalies more than 10 because there's way too many other holes on this team. You can't sacrifice that much cap room because at the end of the day, that could be the difference of landing the big free agent is the extra million, 2 million that you could throw them over the top on a 7-year deal.
They need the Russian or the other guy, Gamzin and fucking...
They're a couple years away, though.
Gimli, whatever the guy's name is.
I think that's the plan. I think this offseason they're going to sign a guy to a 1-2-year deal that's a true, true backup, and then hope one of these two, Gidloff or Gamzin, one of these two can prove themselves to be an NHL backup behind Sorokin.
All right. I just think it's just so trash. Whatever.
I have to bring in a topic here that I'm forcing into the podcast.
I do it all the time.
Canada, Team Canada on Four Nations. Did you guys notice a defenseman that made that team? That was kind of surprising.
Here we go.
Pareko.
Nope.
I went right to the Blues because I know your Blues den on the side.
True. But not Pareko.
Who made it?
Name him, Jack.
Harley?
His name is Travis Sanheim.
Oh.
Now, do you guys remember this trade deadline? A defenseman's name was on the trade market. He never got moved because he got injured. Rasmus Ristolainen. That guy at one point was a buyout candidate. Last one. League minimum defenseman last season was signed to a 3-year contract extension. His name is Nick Seeler. Made a nice chunk of change for himself. Anyway, my point, who developed all those defensemen?
We're not doing this.
I know what you're doing. Oh my God.
We're not doing this.
No.
We're doing this.
Just saying. I'm not saying his name. He's like
John.
John. I'm not going to say.
John Tortorella is his name.
We're not hiring John Tortorella in the year 2025. It's an awful idea.
So tell me this. You have to answer another question for me.
Go for it.
Do you guys like answer this honestly? You can't count the Duclair thing. Do you guys think there's like a little bit of a country club feel on this team, right?
Yeah.
Are you fucking joking?
Do you think,
is that a serious question?
It is because no.
I think it's going to be a series of questions. So let's not overreact.
How do you guys think Patrick
Waugh make it rhetorical? That's not. He's not even. He's not. No. Hold on. He's not even asking that rhetorically. Of course there is.
Yeah. So do you guys, when Waugh was hired, I don't know about you guys, but I was kind of looking forward to seeing some, like, okay, you know what? You've been on this team for 5 years, but you fucking suck right now. Pulock,
yeah, you want him to fight coaches. You want the fire. I get it.
I just don't think that Waugh's done the job that we all thought he would in terms of holding the players accountable that aren't performing, that have been on this team for dozens of years already. Like, I want John Tortorella to coach this team. I think he'll improve the defense. I think he will make the players better, as he did with the three I just mentioned. And I think that there will be an accountability in the room with him there. You can't just take a shift off, even if you're Pierre-Luc Dubois, 20 years old. Like, we can't have this. Like, we can't have Pulock playing because he's on a 6-year contract. Like, I get it. It sucks. It's a bad deal that Lou made. But Waugh's just rolling him out there like it's 2019. It just can't happen anymore. And I don't know how Islander fans are so against this. I don't get it. I feel like nobody really knows
anything. Because it's done, Jack. It's the game has passed him by.
Why do you think that?
Oh, I'm going to tell you. Because as time goes on, you need to adjust. The league changes. So as a coach, you need to change. Not completely change, but over time, you know, maybe a little bit more loose, maybe let the guys on Instagram a little more, maybe whatever. There's this new generation of players that are not used to a John Tortorella type of coach. I mean, he literally had a shouting match with one of his players in the locker room and allegedly told one of his players that I'll bury you if you're not traded in the offseason. Do you want
that? I wish he would say that to Pullock.
Yeah, you say that. You say that because you want him to hold Pullock accountable, but you're not taking into account how that affects the rest of the locker room. Do you want what the New York Rangers went through this year? Where, and I'm not saying Drury was wrong to get rid of Gaudreau and get rid of Trouba, but from a human standpoint, if these guys in the room feel like you disrespect player one and two, the other 18 are not just going to rally around you just for the sake of it. It bothers them, just like it probably bothered them that your boy Lane Lambert benched Josh Bailey for his 1,000th game. This bothers players. John Tortorella does things that bothers players. He's a PR nightmare, and he will not fit this team. I will be very, very upset if it's even considered.
Am I misremembering, or didn't he get into it with someone in the Columbus locker room about like stealing their phone or something like
that? No, that's Babcock.
That's Babcock.
Oh, that was Babcock.
With our boy Mitch Marner.
There we go. The same Babcock who went after Mitch Marner about the contract and Matt Martin had to come to his defense.
Yes,
that one.
Yes.
Okay.
Good friend. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Not Tortorella. He wouldn't.
Different
that.
Dickhead.
Yeah. Torts would never do such a thing.
I understand what you're saying, Jack. There's a happy medium that can be achieved, but I don't have an answer right now.
It's a no for
you
me,
guys, but do you see where I'm coming from? At least, like, I really think, like, the thing is with
we need a new age. We need a new age Torts. That's what we need. Not Torts. We need like a new younger version of him, if it exists.
Like, we need a new roster.
That's the main thing too. We need a new roster, and not only with like, yes, I get it with Torts. He gets a lot out of his players, but it gets old. If my dream coach, personally, if we were to move on from Wah, I'd be praying that the Pittsburgh Penguins would let Mike Sullivan go. That's my guy. But it's never going to happen. He's not coming here. I'll tell you that.
Last season, the Flyers had a terrible team that was with the worst goaltending in the NHL, both statistically and analytically, and they were 1 point away from making the playoffs. Like, I just think I think for at least for the first few years, Torts can always maximize everything on his team. And yeah, I think that he would be a great coach for us. I really do.
You know who also did that?
Who?
Barry Trotz.
Exactly. So let's, yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Barry Trotz is not John Tortorella. Barry Trotz is a stand-up guy. Terrible GM. Great coach.
He's I was talking about this with my dad today, actually. Like, Tortorella has a similar sort of like, he gets similar results out of his defenders and makes them better, but there's just a step below. Like, Trotz will actually take you deep in the playoffs. Like, I don't know if Tortorella can do that. I think Trotz can make this a watchable team, though.
Trotz, to me, is more like a full system change where he can take your whole system and fix it and find, like, what are your little holes and plug them. And Torts is more of, like, this mentality guy, that he's going to give you this mentality that, like, we could beat anyone, go block shots, go do this, do the dirty work, and we could win some games. And
he's a Dan Campbell.
Yeah, and the thing is, Dan Campbell is probably way more likable in that locker room than Torts is.
Yeah.
And Dan Campbell's a fucking badass guy that played the game too. So it's a little bit different. You know, I think Dan Campbell is sort of like,
did you guys see today?
It's that Torts respect, but also partially like that Wah respect. Like, he played the game. He's a big dude. So he's like a blend of Torts and Wah.
My issue is like, I don't know if you guys really pay attention to the other team, but the Flyers today, did you see their line of Forrester, Kate, and Bobby Brink? All three of those players were not great when Torts first got there, and now all three are a damn good line. Like,
Bobby Brink was the one he had the argument with and told him he'd bury him, by the way.
I thought it was Cam York.
Was it York or Brink?
Yeah, York. It was, oh, okay. York. He actually screamed at Bobby Brink on the bench last year, and even I was like, damn, Torts, that's a little too far. But he's gotten them to be a lot better, and I don't know where this, like, Don't listen to what everybody said, all the casuals say. I actually have watched the Flyers a ton over the last few years. He's done a good job of developing these players.
All right.
He has. I'm telling
it's not,
you.
Jack, it's not Flyers house. We're going to have to move on from Torts.
All right. We can move on. But I made my point. He should be the next head coach of this team if Wah leaves.
No, thank you.
We'll let the people decide.
They're all going to agree with you.
You can put up a poll tomorrow on the page, Jack. It'll make you happy.
All right, moving on to questions.
Yeah, are we ready for questions? Or
I think so.
Okay, so we got a bunch today. We're going to try to go through as many as we can. Okay, starting off, friend of the program, Mr. 305 at SBBIGD. What are your positive takeaways from this year, if any? LOL. Ethan?
My positive
takeaways?
I think of
one for you.
Okay, which is
10.
I have a few. I remember.
You go, Jack.
I remember after the trade deadline, we had a show, and I went back and I listened to it the other day because I was listing off things that I wanted to see after the deadline. The first thing I wanted to see was Engvall taken off the fourth line to see if he had anything left. And you guys all laughed at me, literally all of you, and you roasted me. But you know what? He took him off the fourth line, and we saw something. So, okay, Pierre Engvall could be a third-line winger in this league, and that is the best job Patrick Roy has done with this team, honestly. He got the best out of that guy, and hopefully it becomes a consistent theme moving forward.
By the way, how bad was that? Like, I saw him come back on the bench. Was he actually going to come back in and play? Because it looked really bad.
It looked really bad.
I thought he was done into next season.
We'll need you and Ethan to dig a little bit on that, because I was shocked.
That was, like, kind of scary at first, but... Ethan, when I said 10, I meant Holmstrom for your positive.
Oh, yeah, for sure, Holmstrom. Well, Jack had a few others, and then I'll get into Holmstrom.
Holmstrom, I'm still in the middle of. The second one is Bo Horvat can produce without Matt Barzal, I think. That's fair to say. That's important.
Yeah. He's done that before, though.
The thing is Bo Horvat has been playing against every team's best defensive pair now for, 2 months, and he's still
His first year.
Exactly, but now he won't have to do that anymore. Now that's reserved for Barzal. And if it's the other way around, then Barzal gets the easier pair. So I think that's really good. I'll leave it at that because I'm not going to buy on certain things I'm not going to buy into other things until I see more.
All right, so Jack's bright spots are a third-line winger who we don't have to buy out and something that we knew already.
No, we didn't know Bo Horvat can produce.
Yes, we did. He carried them into the playoffs his first year without Barzal.
He didn't produce offensively. You're forgetting. He scored like 2 goals. He wasn't producing offensively. He can produce offensively.
Game was crazy though.
He did everything.
Yes, but now he scores without Barzal. It's different.
Okay, my bright spot, Simon Holmstrom. I genuinely think the Islanders have a perennial 25 goal scorer, top six winger, homegrown. Phil's posted the stats. If you compare them to Brock Nelson year over year, he's on a similar, if not better, trajectory. He's one of the team's better defensive offensive forwards. He's their best PKer statistically. The haters are going to hate, but he got minimal power play time, especially earlier in the year. He's playing on the PK. I think as he grows and he grows into a more, I'll say, cemented top six role, we're going to see a ton more offensive production from the guy. He's a huge bright spot. He's probably my only bright spot because this roster is an abomination and needs probably like 50% turnover to be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender.
So for my positive, I'm actually going to take a step away from the current roster. And I'm going to say my positive is actually an improving prospect pool with the addition of Richie, a little bit development of Yzerman, Nelson, and then not where we want to be, but we're going to have another top pick. So I'm hoping for a much, much better prospect pool at the beginning of next year. So I'll go with that, adding to the prospect pool, even though it's still very mid.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
It's a bit of a cop-out answer.
Why is it a cop? You want me to pick someone on the current roster?
Yeah.
I mean, I had to for you to say mine is a cop out when I gave you yours, I think is not the classiest move. But
I've been like the number one Simon Holmstrom guy the last month.
Yeah, but why didn't you figure it out on your own? I had to
because I just did a Seder and had 4 glasses of wine.
Oh, well, I think that's why you're going after me.
Little, not going after you. I'm angry going after you. Dino. Not angry, just a little banter. I think it's a little bit of a cop-out. Give a current roster bright spot.
I thought your pass or fail earlier in the year was a cop-out. We all have cop-outs throughout the season.
That's fine, but I stood by
anyway,
it.
Anyway, next question. we're going to go in the opposite direction. Rob Tobb asks, what was the one aspect about the team that angered you all individually this season?
Getting stuck in the parking garage.
You're the angriest. You answer first.
Getting stuck in the parking garage.
Did you have to scan on the way up?
I did. It was bullshit. No. What was Rob's question?
What was the one aspect about the team that angered you all individually this season? What angered you the most?
Oh, man. Well, I know what Jack's answer is. It's extra skater Mark Gackholm and Hudson Fashing. I'm just joking. The most angry. It's really fucking hard to dial in on one.
There's a lot.
There's so much. I don't know. I feel like I've been pretty fair this year in being equally angry with almost everyone on the roster.
Aside from the I don't want Rocco, you can't get mad at.
I don't want Rocco to say that's a cop out answer, so I'm just gonna keep thinking harder and try to find one.
I have one.
Go ahead,
okay, Jack, you go.
You know who really pissed me off this season? It's actually a player. Anthony Duclair really pissed me off, and it's not even just at him. I've never had this situation with any player in Islanders history ever. I was at a game a few weeks ago, and this guy had been moseying around playing like shit for fucking 2 months in our top six. I know why this happened to me. It's because it's karma. Because when I was happy that Josh Bailey was still playing in his last season, everyone else was furious that this guy was still there. That's actually how I felt with Duclair this whole time. He scored a power play goal about 2 weeks ago against the Canadiens after playing like absolute garbage for a full month and being injured. And when he scored, I remember thinking he scored. So now they're going to have to keep him in the top six. He's going to be on this power play and he's going to be an absolute nothing. Him being in the top six for however long he was after this trade deadline, I think really helped bury this team. And the usage of him really pissed me off. So my answer is Anthony Duclair and the volume of the
music.
Can
I ask you a question, Jack?
Yeah.
Who would you rather have been playing in his spot?
Siplikov.
Okay. I think Engvall. That's a fair answer.
Nope. And a quick one. He had it.
Engvall,
Siplikov. Siplikov is the only one I think is legitimate.
Boqvist. He might play wing tomorrow, I realize, with Engvall hurt. Imagine.
You're right. Why not? Give him
a go.
Why not?
Yeah, let's
your boy Perunovic play wing. Yeah, play,
you know, fucking Scotty's on right wing, Boqvist on left wing.
Ethan, you got one yet or
no? You go.
I mean, aspect that meet again. There was a lot that angered me.
Oh, I have my answer.
Not
blown leads, maybe.
Blown leads to their.
Are we naming individuals?
Blown leads was an early season thing. But go ahead, Ethan. If you have one, go.
Are we doing individuals?
Whatever anything. You
want. Well, there's anything. One moment.
Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah, that's the perfect.
This motherfucker assembled his team, and after yet another down year, is trying to just run it back. If he had it his way, we would have close to $10 million tied up in a 34 and a 35-year-old to start next season.
You know what? I have another one. I have to say it. We got outscored by the New York Rangers 23-5. This team should be blown up. That's a fucking travesty. That's pathetic.
Yeah, I agree with Ethan. Just like Lou as a whole, not selling more at the deadline, how we started the season with this roster. Tyler, one of our producers, just said Matt Martin signing in November bothered him a lot, which I think is fair. A lot of us just does any other team sign Matt Martin if he's available via free agency?
Zero.
Exactly. And listen, and Tyler knows this because we speak about it all the time in the group chat. If he does his job this summer, it's fine. But the jury's still out on it. I'll tell you how I feel about the Matt Martin signing come July, because it might all be worth it in the end.
I'll go one more, and it's not an individual. It's not a concept. It's really geared towards a group or a portion of the fan base who, at the sight of any Lou Lamoriello criticism, will immediately react and tell fans, "You don't know how good you have it. If we get rid of Lou, we're going back to the dark ages. No. Shut up. You're not talking, this isn't like ancient history. This is recent history. I was alive and vividly remember trading for Tim Thomas's contract so that the New York Islanders under Charles Wong could reach the cap floor. This is not a scumbag owner whose business partners are in jail buying a hockey team for a failed real estate project. Okay? This is not the Islanders who the owner is making the GM of the team, the backup goaltender, because he's doing his own cap-friendly bullshit on his fantasy team on the back of the team bus. All right? This is two incredibly serious, multi-million, I don't even know, probably billionaire owners who have now a brand new arena, a shopping mall. They've gotten all their real estate stuff. This is a team that's not just trying to reach the cap floor. This is a team that spends to the cap ceiling on an annual basis under this ownership group. You can question their involvement, you can question their hiring practices, but you cannot question whether or not getting rid of Lou Lamoriello is going to bring this team back to cap floor miserable years. It is not. It's not going to happen. It's just not. Sure, you bring in a new GM, maybe the GM wants to blow it up and build things in his image. All right, that's fine. But this is not like if we lose Lou, the prophet, the god, the guy who's just bowed down to by NHL insiders and commentary and ownership groups, that all of a sudden this team is going to be a basement, bottom-dwelling franchise again. That's not the case. Get that garbage out of your head.
I think too, you can like it's one of those you can do both things. Like you could respect Lou's first few years here where he brought respect back to the
Lou's
organization.
done great things.
They made their runs, but I think you now have to judge Lou's tenure in two parts. Part A is those Eastern Conference Finals runs, bringing in Barry Trotz, doing great things for this franchise. The second half is what we see the last few, just mediocrity, first round exits, and putting this team sort of in cap hell, if we're being honest. I mean, they couldn't do too much these last few off seasons without attempting to move a Pageau or a guy like that, who we know they were trying to move
I'm so
numerous
happy that's
times.
over, dude. Like praying that they
Not
move
over, he's still on
Concho.
this team.
I'm glad that the days though of being like, oh, we physically cannot do any. Like there was no way we were ever
Yeah,
gonna
it should
have.
be over. But again, he tried to re-sign these guys. But to get to, from Ethan's point, I think saying, oh, it used to be so bad. Like we can't accept mediocrity. Like the goal is to win a Stanley Cup, not make the playoffs. Yes,
These
things were
people.
horrendous back then. Now we need to strive for something better. We can't stay
That's
in
my
the middle.
issue.
We can't stay in the middle. Like Ethan, you and I talk about this all the time. The best we saw were those two Eastern Conference Finals runs. One fucking time before I die. One fucking time. Just win a Stanley Cup, please.
One time.
That's the goal. The goal has to be a Stanley Cup. And I'm sorry, and I know people aren't going to like this, but if you have to take a step back for a year in order to go get the Stanley Cup, take the step back for 2 years. I don't
That's the
care.
thing, Rocco.
Take
You're
two. Create a
100%
window.
right.
Open a window.
You're 100% right, and you're gonna have to do that. And that's what my issue is with these people. And maybe it's just because I go through life a little bit differently than other people, but I am just not a risk-averse individual. I'm very risk-tolerant. Like, whatever I do, I'm looking at upside here. And when I look at this team, I don't see upside. I don't. I see a fairly safe floor pre-Brock trade. If everyone's healthy, all right, you understand what this team's floor is, but where is the ceiling? The ceiling is low. And I just don't understand how people can look at that and look at his intentions of bringing back both Palmieri and Brock Nelson and say, you know what? I'm okay with this.
I don't think anything's ever pissed you off more in your life than knowing that Lou tried so hard to re-sign Brock Nelson.
No, dude, that's going to be a thing where I'm like 80 years old telling my grandkids about the Islanders and just like, can you believe this fucking guy? He tried to bring back Brock and Palms.
With Lou, like I've been one to defend him most of the time. And like if it were up to me right now, if I held the decision, I don't know what I would do. And that's significantly a change from where I was saying last time, in which I would rather have him operate the organization this offseason, just because he began his plan the second he traded Brock Nelson, and another person coming in here while he's in the middle of that, I think is dangerous. But honestly, what the hell do we have to lose at this point? It's tough. I don't know.
Next question.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to keep it in rhythm here. So I saw a good one that pertains to what we just discussed from Chris Gary at cgary1022. Let's assume Lou gets shit canned. Who would you want as GM and head coach?
Johnny Boy Chuck and Josh Bailey.
No, I'm kidding. What about, I think you could throw out like for GM, because as we discussed, like Malkin's probably going to want someone to run it from the top down. I'm sure there's a few dark horse candidates around that maybe we don't know too much about. But some names I could see are Shanahan, Jeff Gordon, guys like that. And I'd be fine with it, especially, listen, we talk about Marner nonstop. If you want to bring in Shanahan, if Toronto doesn't have such a good playoffs and then try to recruit Marner, go right ahead. And he's another guy, like, he has a reputation of being a star player. Like, I think he could attract guys here. I wouldn't mind that, but I just want someone that has a bit more creative thinking than our current GM.
I don't know. I don't know GM candidates. I just don't.
Well, Jack, would you want a known commodity or would you want more of a younger guy that's more into analytics, a Tulsky type guy?
I don't want a Tulsky, I'll tell you that.
So I, judging off you wanting Tortorella as head coach, I would assume you would want some old school GM.
Yeah, I'd want someone probably more, I don't know.
Is there another 80-year-old out there that Jack could get
head
us?
Coach, a head coach, you guys know my answer. I said it before. I want it to be John Tortorella. For GM, though, I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, the thing is with the head coach question, I think you have to answer the GM one first because it would be tied to the GM, right? Like the new GM, like what about a Yarmo type hire? Like if you hire Yarmo, who does he bring in? I'm just saying like each guy's probably going to have their own person they'd want as the head coach. So they'd be, they'd sort of be tied together.
I'll say this. If you want to pluck an assistant like they do in the NFL, get one out of Tampa Bay, get one out of Vegas. Any executive in one of those organizations, just grab them and let's see where it goes.
Winnipeg.
Yeah, those three.
GM?
Yeah. Especially Winnipeg, because they have to deal with nobody wanting to go there, and they're constantly in the playoffs every year. They
draft incredibly well.
A build within type GM that's been there.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you with that. All right. Any other answers or next question?
Keep an eye on Toronto.
All right. This one's from Daniel Gershoff. I'm Dan the Man at I'm Dan the Man. You may see him at games in the oversized Isles hat. Do you see any offer sheets getting thrown around either to our own players or the Isles doing it to other teams?
Good Lord. Isn't Dobson offer sheet eligible?
Yeah.
I pray that someone offer sheets him. Please, 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 please offer sheet him.
But the issue with offer sheeting him, Ethan, is then that your compensation is strictly draft picks. You're okay with that?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Actually, with Dobson, I've come around on him a little bit.
Oh, good Lord.
No. It's one of these things, Ethan. So,
educate me.
NHL executives love this guy. Analytics community love this guy. I hate this guy. You know what? this team fucking sucks. We have a 24-year-old defenseman that everyone else thinks is good except me. I don't think my opinion is the greatest opinion of all time. Fuck it. Roll the dice. Pray all these people are right. Like, that's how I feel.
The fuck are you talking about, Jack?
You're resigning, Jack.
Just roll it.
You watch more hockey than anyone else on this podcast. You watch other teams around the NHL. The second the New York Islanders traded for Scott fucking Perunovic, you were like, no. Like, this guy's okay. Like, this was a great trade. And, yeah, he hasn't been getting played, but you were correct. And you, of all people, are going
because,
to bow to the analytics community
because
versus
because,
what you've seen from Noah Dobson.
It's because the type of players I like, he literally
disappointed
fits.
In you.
You know what? The type of player Dobson is the type of player that I don't latch onto. I don't like the soft shit. I don't like the effort shit sometimes. I get frustrated with him. It's just like when a player is high, I don't know if you noticed this, but when players have high ass expectations and they don't meet them, that drives me crazier than Engvall. Like Sorokin, you've seen, I get pissed off with him. Like Dobson, I've been frustrated with him because these guys are supposed to be the guys. Like With Dobson, I do see a little bit of the puck going in every single mistake this guy does have. I see that. And I don't really love him. But you know what? Sometimes, like, you gotta just have a little bit of faith. Like,
all what's the compensation on an offer sheet for Dobson, real quick? Do we know?
I don't know.
Well, it would depend how much it's determined by the deal he accepts.
Yeah, okay. So at least eight he's asking for.
I don't know if eight is that, Tyler, if you could try to look that up quick. I don't know if eight is the highest one. The highest one, isn't it 4 first round picks?
Yeah, no, it's a
lot. I think that might be like 10 plus, no?
He's a right shot defenseman that he's supposed to be a franchise.
No one's giving him $10 million and then giving up 4 first round picks too.
That's true. No one is doing
that. Cause you gotta like, yeah, you might want, like, if Dobson isn't here next year, I don't think it's an offer sheet. I think it's a hockey trade.
All right. Well, Jack just dropped. So Rocco, I'm sure he'll be back.
But
no, that's what he gets for defending Noah Dobson. But next, go ahead.
Next question from at EJK612. Too many people are worried about Dobson and Romanov, but what do we think the Holmstrom and Siplikov contracts look like?
Simon's like tough. I mean, does he want an 8-year deal, or is he going to take like
the Carolina special where you give him like that 8-year at not so high AAV? Would you do that?
I would absolutely do that. But the problem is, what is he going to get? Like, I would very happily and comfortably give him. And again, this is, you know, I don't want this to come back and bite me in the ass because we were talking about long-term extensions, but cap's going up. So I'll try not to worry about it so much. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even think at this point, you know, with the season he's having, the point per game pace that he's having, like, am I crazy to say like 8 years, $5 million? I think that's low.
I think I would do that.
I would do that in a second. I think that's probably low.
Oh, just to clarify, Tyler just came in here. Above 11.4 is 4 first rounders.
He's not getting 11.4.
9.1 to 11.4 is 2 first rounders, a second and a third.
Okay, so if he gets that last tier, 6.8 to 9.1, a first, second, and a third for Noah Dobson, yes, please sign me up.
Yeah, and that's the next tier, which, yeah, I could, you know, I'd probably accept that too. But I don't think it's going to be an offer sheet. Jack, I don't think you were here for that question. It was too many people are worried about Dobson and Romanov, but what do we think the Holmstrom and Siplikov contracts look like? Ethan just said he's willing to give Holmstrom a long-term deal, even if it's a little higher AAV for its potential
long-term. I mean, what was Lafreniere's deal?
What
was Lafreniere's deal?
I think it was $7 million per year.
It might be, yeah. I think 8 years, $7 million, something like that.
I think that's, yeah. It might be 8x8.
It might be, but you got to keep in mind, Laf got paid that off
a big season. I understand.
And they thought that was the stepping stone season, and then he was going to take off, and that was going to be a bargain. Now they're worried.
100%. So, but I'm just using that as a basis point. So if he's getting 8x8, and he got that in a flat cap era. Versus Simon Holmstrom, who's on the up. If he gets term, like, I mean, I said 8 years, $5 million. Like, am I crazy to go 8x6.5?
Yeah, that's, I think. So here's my thing with the two of them. I'd be willing to go long term on Simon. If Simon wants to go 6, 7, 8 at a reasonable AAV, do it. With Siplikov, I like what I see, but he also has a lot of flaws in his game. Most of them, in my opinion, are due to him getting used to North America, like the little passes in the defensive zone and whatnot, the size of the rink, whatever else. But Siplikov, I'm not giving more than like a 3-year deal. And I'm not taking a shot at him there. It's just like, I got to see it a little more. I got to see it.
I'm not even going to take a guess.
Siplikov?
Yeah, I'm not even going to take a guess. I wouldn't even go that.
I think Siplikov gets a 2x2.
Okay, you think 2x2. Ethan, you wouldn't go 3x3. Why? Term or AAV, both? What is it?
I'm just like, if you were to have said what you just said, Rocco, about him getting used to North American ice after the first 3 or 4 months of the season, I'd be like, okay, 100%. But he's not, like, he's got great hands. I think he's got an underrated shot. Like, I think offensively, he's a great depth forward. But if you're going to be a depth forward, you have to be much, much better defensively than he is. And listen, I think Jack's 2x2, sure, sign me up. If he wants to be a third line winger, no problem. The guy takes so many boneheaded penalties. It is an effort question for me sometimes. I'm not in love with the player. as much as I was at the beginning of the season.
So the only thing with Sipikov where you have to be careful is if you go short, I'm pretty sure this might be his last RFA eligible year. So if you go two, you got to keep in mind, I believe it's
I'm fine with that.
UFA right after two.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, no, it is fair because he hasn't proven enough, but that's why I wouldn't mind like a 3x3 type thing. Cause at least if he does pop, like that's a real bargain.
Yeah.
And then Holmstrom, yeah, I would try long-term, but honestly, if I'm Simon Holmstrom and I feel like Holmstrom's floor has kind of been established to me where he's like a solid third line guy, but I feel like he has room there with that ceiling. So like if I'm Simon, I'm probably taking a short term, hoping I could cash in on the next one.
I sort of disagree.
You think he's popping right now and this might be the best we see?
No.
I think with Holmstrom, it's good to get him locked up on a long-term deal before he pops off, because
I'm saying if I'm Simon, I would love for him to, I'm saying if I was in his shoes, I wouldn't want to sign the long-term deal.
I don't think his upside is to the point where in 2 years, he's getting $8.5 or $9 million.
No,
I don't.
But with the rising cap, like we're going to see new, like 8.5.
I know it's tough to project
in 3-4 years is like the 5.5-6 now, right?
I get it. Yeah. Like Bo Horvat's deal in 2031 is like 5.5, 5.7.
Today. Yeah. Yeah.
Might have kids by the time that guy freaking.
Let's not get crazy.
No, okay. My God. These contracts are long.
All right. Next question.
Okay. This is from our boy Ian. At Ian_10_19, what do we think (parentheses not want) our defense is on opening night? So what do we think we end up looking at as our six opening night next year?
Well, I'll let Jack handle the free agent or trade.
So you could just say like
of the current roster.
Yeah, who's here? Who's here? That's here right now.
Tony, Romanov, Pulock.
Oh.
And
Boquist,
Mayfield. I think those four are here.
I think, yeah, in my head right now, I think Mayfield's going to get traded because I think that whole thing was sort of to piss him off and say like, hey, you're not really in the shuffle here. Like you're kind of on the outs with on this roster. You don't fit the system, whatever. I think Mayfield gets moved. And I think Pellick gets moved because he doesn't have as much trade protection as Pulock. So I think Pulock is here. Tony's here. Dobson's here. That makes up the right side. I think Romanov's here. I think that maybe they'll re-sign a guy like Riley and then figure out the other lefty.
Who's here to start the season next year? On the left side, Romanov, George,
You got George making the roster out of camp.
Yeah.
Okay.
Romanov, George, and I hope it's Pellick, but I think that's a UFA signing or a trade chip. Right side, Dobson, D'Angelo, Boquist. Pulock, and the thing is, I think they are going to try to trade Pulock, but I don't think they're going to be able to, and I think they'll end up trading Mayfield. The true tragedy to this, in my opinion, is that Pulock is actually like the problem, and he needs to be moved way before Mayfield or Pellick. He needs to be moved first, and that's my strongest opinion about the defense right now. Is like I still think Pellick and Mayfield have good hockey left. I don't think Pulock. I don't know what happened to him. It's kind of like a mystery to me. Like, it's not like he lost his physical ability. Just what happened to this guy?
He's not the fleetest of foot. Probably been banged up a little bit. I mean, it's getting rough. I mean, I feel like every game there's a shift or two where it's just like, holy shit, what is this?
That Rangers game, it literally the first goal of the game.
He was lost.
What the hell was he doing on that first shift? Like, how does that not get you benched?
I he had think an awful he, turnover in overtime against the Flyers. It almost led to the game-winning goal.
I wish it went in.
I think we have to maybe accept that Pulak may have been the biggest Trotz merchant of them all.
Yes, fine. I'm good with that.
I think that's fair. I thought it was Pelech. I think it might be Pulak.
And Pelech, I think, has good hockey left, and it sucks, but they might have to trade him too. But I do my hot take right now is I think George makes the team out of camp.
Yeah, I could see that. And the other, and again, you never wish this on anyone, but the other side of Pelech, I think we forget too, is like this guy's dealt with a lot of injuries, concussions. Yeah. You know, I think he dealt with the Achilles once. Like, it's not that crazy to say he's like one more big injury away from being done either, Pelech. So,
especially concussion.
Yeah. So if you want to trade him, it would probably now would be the time. But next question and then done. One more. All right. We'll move towards another summer type question. Say the Isles, this is from Ryan at RJNYYO. Say the Isles come in at number 10 in the draft. Do you think they make any effort to move up for Higgins? To what Yes. spot do you think they would move up to, and what could be given up?
That part I don't know, but I do think they make an effort to move up.
I do think they make an effort to move up as well. Some of that detail maybe I'll get into more down the road. Just from a general perspective, I mean, it's a great PR move, right? Like, if Lou's still the GM and you can't land that free agent, wouldn't it be a nice start to just go get the hometown kid and all the fans are cheering? Yeah, we got the kid from Hop Hog. You know, it's a nice future. And I also want to say, like, he's probably going back to college. I think he needs one more year.
Definitely going back to college.
I love him as a prospect. I love him more than most guys do that post their rankings and whatever else. I'm a huge Higgins fan. I think a lot of him falling is overanalyzing where that he's been ranked number one for like a while now. Because remember about a year and a half ago, we've been reading, oh, the kid from Long Island is going number one, yada, yada. I think people sort of find things to poke at and say, oh, he doesn't have this, he doesn't have that. When in reality, people say that and then it's like, oh, it's his size. But in the new NHL, being 5'10", 180 pounds is fine. I don't buy that knock. And I think people also forget that he's playing in the NCAA, where a lot of the guys that he's getting compared to are in junior leagues where they play 15-year-olds once a week.
Right.
But on as far as what it would take to move up and where he'd go, I mean, as of right now, I say he could probably go anywhere from like, I mean, who knows come draft day, but right now, I think he could go anywhere from 3 to 6.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. And now if you're number 10 and you're trading up to 6, like it's not that huge of a jump, right? But that jump from 10 to 3 feels big. So I'm going to use his question for another question here. If you are at number 10 and you can get Higgins, if you use the Avalanche number one pick next year, which is a stronger draft, mind you. The 26 draft is stronger than 25, but it's the Avalanche, right? These are contenders. Would you do number 10 overall and the Avs first round pick next year to secure James Higgins?
In a second.
I would too. That pick could be 30, right? That pick could be 32, whatever the cup winner is next year.
I think it probably costs them more. It probably costs them like a few, like maybe a second or like a third or fourth on top of that. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
Again, this is not a strong draft, but we're taught like we agree it's very top heavy. Like you're going to get a good player in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
I would even go as far as to say you probably have to give up your own 26 first instead of the Avalanche. And I would
see,
still
that's
do
where it.
It
gets a little hairy because that's where like, I don't think
depends on how you view this team.
It's a no for me. And I just said how much I love Higgins. I would not give up our own. You could top 10 protect it, but that's where they say, well, if you're going to top 10 protect it, what's the point? But honestly, the going beyond and giving up more assets than that Avs first round pick may depend on, first of all, where Higgins is going to go and where we are placed. Because if we're placed at 10 and we got to go all the way up to 3, yeah, we might have to offer more. But if it's like 10 to 6, I think that's plenty.
Yeah. Yeah, I we're on the exact same page.
Jack,
I agree with everything you said.
Did you answer? Would you give up the number?
Yeah.
our first this year and the Avs next year in order to secure Higgins.
100%.
All right. So good way to finish. I think we could wrap up.
All right. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe. We'll talk to you guys soon.